Becker.
The podcast for London lovers, Anglophiles and critical believers. RevLab. Guten Tag, liebe Podcast-Community. Schön, dass ihr wieder reinhört. Das ist der Podcast «More Tea Vicar» und ich bin Pfarrerin von der Schweizer Kirche in London. Ich rede mit Leuten, die im Grossstadtdschungel leben und überleben und mit Leuten, die die Schweizer Kirche in London und mich als Pfarrerin prägen. Ich ernte ja häufig überraschte Blicke, wenn ich sage, dass die Gottesdienste bei uns in der Kirche auf Englisch sind. Das ist doch genau der Punkt einer Auslandkirche, dass man eben in der Landessprache feiert, so wie das Franzosen, Niederländer und Schweden hier in London auch machen. Aber das mit der Landessprache, das ist ja bei uns Helveten und Helvetinnen so eine Sache. Welche Landessprache darf es denn sein? Bis in den 80er Jahren hat sich auch der Gottesdienst in der Endell Street in der Landessprache abgespielt. Zumindest in den zwei Mehrheitssprachen Deutsch und Französisch. Es hat nämlich zwei Pfarrer gegeben. Einen Welschen und einen Deutschschweizer. Die einen haben am 9:30 gebetet und die anderen am 11. Und ich gehe jetzt mal davon aus, dass Deutschschweizer wahrscheinlich den früheren Slot hatten. Doch dann mit den schwindenden Mitgliederzahlen hat sich das nicht mehr so wirklich gelohnt. Man hat die beiden Gemeinden zusammengelegt und nur noch eine Pfarrperson angestellt. Und dann auch konsequenterweise auf Englisch umgestellt. Heute ist die Mehrheit der Schweizer Gemeinde schweizerdeutschsprachig. Die Wurzeln der Kirche liegen aber im Welschen. Und das sieht man auch an diesen Gedenktafeln an, bei uns in der Kirche, entlang der Wand. Dort sieht man nämlich vor allem französische Schriften. Zum Beispiel erinnert eine von diesen Gedenktafeln an Gründer der Kirche, ein Monsieur Vuillamin. Oder auch an eine beliebte Sonntagsschullehrerin. Mein heutiger Gast bringt uns direkt ins Herz der Schweizer Kirchengemeinde hier in London. Und sie ist eine Welsche. Fernande Kunz ist 1963 als junge Frau nach London gekommen. Aufgewachsen ist sie in Tavan, wo sie ihr aber schon früh ein bisschen zu eng war. Und England hat sie immer fasziniert. So hat sie sich dann auf das Abenteuer eingelassen und ist geblieben. Der Fernand, ihre jurassische Herkunft, erinnert mich auch an meine eigenen Wurzeln. Meine Grossmutter mütterlicherseits war nämlich eine Welsche, aus dem kleinen Dörfli Kremin bei Moutier. Sie ist als junge Frau nach Lys ausgewandert, wo sie nie so richtig glücklich geworden ist und ihre welsche Heimat sehr vermisst hat. Später hat sie dann sogar eine Weile lang bei uns in St. Gallen gewohnt, in einer Nachbarswohnung, dass wir zu ihr schauen können. Also noch viel weiter weg von ihrer Heimat und von ihrer Muttersprache. Bis sie dann im höheren Alter ins Altersheim nach Kremin gezogen ist. Zurück zu ihren Wurzeln, wo wir sie auch häufig besucht haben. Ich denke, häufig unterschätzt man, was die Entwurzelung auch innerhalb vom eigenen Land mit den Menschen macht, gerade in einem vielfältigen Land wie der Schweiz. Zurück nach London. Die Migrationsgeschichte der Fernande steht für viele Migrationsgeschichten von jungen Schweizerinnen, die in den 60er Jahren nach England gezogen sind. Diese Frauen sind das Herz und Seele unserer Gemeinde. Und gerade jetzt während der Pandemie ist das Netzwerk wichtiger denn je. Ob katholisch oder evangelikal, konfessionslos oder reformiert, das spielt gar nicht so eine grosse Rolle. Die Schweizer Kirche ist ein Heimatort. Ein Heimatort für die, die hier ihre Wurzeln geschlagen haben oder noch wollen und die Gemeinschaft suchen. Ich weiss noch, wie ich ganz am Anfang vom ersten Lockdown einmal mit Fernande telefoniert habe. Und sie hat zu mir gesagt, «You know, we older people, we are fine. We have our friends to support us and neighbors who offer their help. Call the young people. They need you now.» Und sie hat recht gehabt.
I am with Fernand Kunz today. Hi, Fernand. Great to have you here. Thank you so much. Fernand moved from Switzerland to London as a young woman and has spent most of her adult life in this wonderful city that we all love so much, working and living. She's now retired, yet a very active person, for instance, as a member of the Swiss Church. And like many of her generation, Fernand is settled in Britain. No intention to go back, although she has still strong links with her family and friends. So today is really about Fernand's story, about her experience of London as well, and also what the Swiss Church means for the congregation and the times we live in today. So Fernand, perhaps to start with, tell us your story. What brought you to London in the first place, and also what kept you here?
Well, I was inspired by a cousin of mine who was 18 years my senior, and she had come to Charing in Kent for 1 year, staying with the family. And on her days off, she was actually coming to London and was really full of it. So that really was my first inspiration. I thought, that sounds really nice. I'd quite like to go there at some stage. But I was only just a kid at this stage. Anyway, when I came to the age of 14, I had the opportunity to choose another language. What was it going to be? Was it going to be Italian or was it going to be English? Well, of course, it was going to be English. At this stage, I was almost making my choice. Anyway, the first year, I got on terribly well with English and I thought, I've got to go there at some stage, but what am I going to do? The idea was that I could go to England for a year or maybe a bit more, and then I'd come back to Switzerland and I would like to use this language. So what am I going to do with my life? Which way am I going to go? I didn't really want to study, really go to university or anything like this. I thought, no, that's not me. I'm much more of a materialistic, sort of artistic sort of girl, and I didn't want to pursue any studies. So I thought English will be fine. I'll go to England and I'll learn English and I'll come back to Switzerland and I make up my mind now. I am going to work in an office as a secretary and then use this English as a second language. So that's what I did.
What year was that?
Well, that was in the late 50s, in about 57 when I was 14. Then I decided to apply for a position as a secretary. So 1 year before leaving school, I already had a position as an apprentice in a firm, and I ended up in an insurance office, which was fine. During this period of time, I had a colleague who wanted to come to England. So I said to her, well, if you go there for a year, could you reserve me your spot? And she said, well, it's all very well, but my sister wants to come. She wants to come immediately after me. So I said, well, that's fine. She can come after you. Then I can work perhaps another year or so in Switzerland and then go to England. I'd still be young, so that would be fine.
So you were really determined to go to England.
I definitely was.
And I'd imagine it must have been quite a big adventure at the time. Nowadays, you just get on a plane. I mean, not during the pandemic, but normally we can just get on the plane. You can fly home. You can talk on the phone. But back then, it was a different kind of adventure, I'd imagine.
Well, it really was, and I was a bit scared. Well, obviously, I'd be on my own, on a plane, on my own, and it was the first time I was going on a plane. I'd been on holidays to Italy with the family, but we went by rail, or part of it by car, and all of a sudden, I was actually flying off to a foreign country. But anyway, I was reasonably well-equipped, language-wise, so I wasn't frightened. That wasn't frightening me. It was the flying, which was much more...
The flight was the worst part of it.
Much worse.
Yeah, I think you're a very, very brave person then.
Much worse than going to learn the language. Anyway, I already had friends here, again, going to evening classes in Switzerland during my apprenticeship. I made some friends who knew the person whom I was going to take over from as an English candidate. So it worked out that way. I was met at the airport by this friend of mine I had met, and she came with the family. They picked me up by car at Heathrow Airport to take me to London.
And that was the first time you ever set foot in London?
Yes, very first time, very first time. So that's how I landed on the 24th of February 1963. I landed in London. I landed in Brookfield Avenue, Muswell Hill, where I stayed for just over a year. Now, this particular winter had been extremely severe, very, very cold winter. And at street corners, you still had remains of dark, dirty, dirty snow and ice. And it was really, really cold. Anyway, the first thing was I was introduced, obviously, to the house and to the children, because I was then employed to look after three kids, 7, 3.5, and 9 months. I thought, oh, horrors. Three kids, all of a sudden, I've had any, and three kids I've got to cope with. I have siblings, but I mean, that's not the same. We haven't got that sort of age gap. I had a meal with them and it was time to go to bed. I was assigned a bedroom and I thought, well, it's a bit small. It's not what I'm used to. But anyway, I'll cope with this. But horror came along because I could not sleep. There was no central heating in my room. There was no electric heater in my room. There was heating at any of any kind. And the bed, you're not going to believe this, but the bed was immediately under the window. And windows, what sort of windows? Guillotine windows, not windows that you can open and shut properly.
So you met the good old cold houses of Britain.
Oh my goodness, I never slept.
It must have been even worse still nowadays. It's quite drafty in British houses, but was probably even worse in the 60s, I'd imagine.
Well, in the 60s, they didn't shut properly. These guillotine windows never shut properly.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, they weren't double glazed either. And it felt as if you had the draft. And then the other thing is, I was so used to a nice and cozy duvet. And what did I have? About a pile of blankets, which never replaced about. It was awful. I never slept. When I got to breakfast in the morning, did you sleep well? They said, oh, no, I'm terribly sorry. I've got to move. I have already moved the bed a bit more towards the middle of the room because I didn't want to switch things around late evening. And they said, oh, don't worry. We'll do it for you. Don't do anything. We'll do it for you. So by the next night, I was able to sleep a bit better, to be quite truthful, because the bed was towards an inner wall and I was happy I was away from the draft. It was really cold.
So you had all this experience of Britain. It was a bit different maybe from your dream. You're still in London today.
Yes.
So what is it that kept you in London?
Well, what kept me in London is really much later on when I applied for a position. A year on, I applied for a position, which I got as a secretary to the then catering manager at University College Hospital. And I met some more friends. I really liked it so much. The atmosphere was just like a family. I was back into a family unit, to be quite truthful. And that's what I liked so much. And then obviously it was Swiss friends, of course, as well, because at this stage I'd been to the Swiss church. Again, I felt that I actually knew the Swiss church before getting there, simply because my cousin had been so full of it. She was in the times of Pasteur Reverdin in the 50s. She was so full of it that it encouraged me really to get into it. Well, I belonged to the Protestant church back in Tavannes, which was my village. I was so used to going to church regularly. It was just nice. It was a lovely atmosphere. There were so many of us. All the girls at this stage seemed to be au pair girls. The boys had jobs as such, probably transfers from Switzerland. That's how it progressed.
You were part of the Swiss church from the very beginning when you first moved here.
Yes, definitely.
And that was your social home and that's where you met your friends.
Yeah, definitely. I'd known a few before from Switzerland already. I knew who had been. I knew some of them, even from the village, who were still there finishing their year. I had a nucleus of friends. I never felt lost. I felt I was always part of a group, whichever way I looked. And it was a very warm group. And we were doing things. We were visiting areas. And it was a wonderful place to be in.
What did you like about London most? What was it that kept you in London?
I love music. Not so much theatres, although I did later on, much later on. But in the early stages, it was the Royal Albert Hall, it was the Royal Festival Hall, it was these sort of halls for classical music. I absolutely loved it. I liked the idea of being able to practice piano at the Swiss Church at the stage, because my sister and I had been to various competitions, piano competitions in Switzerland as four hands, myself as a single player as well. And I really did like it and I wanted to carry on. But of course, I didn't have any piano in the location I was in. And the Swiss Church gave me that opportunity. So I carried on playing a bit. I had a few bits and pieces of books of music and playing a bit here and there and everywhere. I didn't want anybody to be near me, but that was the way it was.
Do you still play the piano today?
Well, I still know the notes, obviously, but I do not have any more practice whatsoever. I've actually lost it. My only piano now is the internet. It's my keyboard. That's all. It is a shame. It is a shame. I still love music. I mean, there's no two ways about it. And obviously, I've expanded a bit more from classical into just ordinary sort of music and a mixture of music anyway.
So going back to the Swiss Church and that importance it had for you, and also you were a really big youth group at the time connected to the Swiss Church. Now, 2021, it's very different. I mean, going back pandemic is, of course, different anyway. But how has it changed? What is the Swiss Church for you today?
Well, the Swiss Church still means the same. I go for the services, still means the same. The friendship is the same, albeit we're older, elderly people. I'm getting on in years myself. And there are friends who are much older than me, friends who are slightly younger than me. But it's a different ballgame. We've retired people. The young generation don't seem to be maybe interested as much. And of course, the girls don't come as au pairs anymore. If they come to England, they either come to a college, they've got enough money to sort of pay for their studies, or else they probably will have been getting a job transfer from Switzerland. As we don't see them, it's very difficult to find out.
And how do you see the Swiss Church congregation develop?
Well, that's a bit difficult, because without the younger generations, we know that there are younger families, but it's how do we bring them into church? I mean, that's the problem. The church is not really a parish church. It's in the middle of central London. And then it means that people have got to travel. And people with families, if you could come easily by car without having surcharges for God knows what, and be able to park, perhaps it would attract younger families. But it's very difficult. It's very difficult for them. For the elderly population like me, it doesn't matter, because I still have got my legs, my faculties. I can still go from A to B. But the day that I can't, I just have to find an alternative, maybe. I don't know. How do we progress? And of course, with COVID has really put a full stop to whatever we were doing before. We've got to restart. We've got to re-encourage, involve people. And it's very, very, very difficult. Mm. I can see in your situation must be terribly hard as well, you know, trying to get the folks together.
Yeah, I just said recently, I think in an interview I gave, for me, the Sunday service is the heartbeat of the church. That's the spiritual center. And it's very, very important. And although the church has all kind of different things with the arts and the internships to tackle youth unemployment and all these things, homeless work, but the spiritual center is our Sunday congregation. Of course, I feel very much the same. I really hope that we can return to it and that we can, if maybe not grow, that at least maintain the congregation. But as you said, it's difficult because you mentioned traveling in by car. I know that many families who are now grandmothers, they say at the time you could just park in front of the church. And now you have to pay money even on weekends to travel into London by car. So it's even just become a cost and you can't park anywhere. And I understand that on a Sunday, if you already work the whole week, you don't want to travel into London as well on a Sunday. So I think it's different. And maybe also because going to church is not as popular anymore. I must say, I love our congregation. I mean, it just makes me so happy on a Sunday to meet up. And I do really miss it very much.
Well, I do too. I mean, the socializing, definitely at church. I mean, as you know, I'm sort of regular attender and love this atmosphere, this, again, family, an enlarged family, really, which we haven't had for nearly a year now. I know that we met again on a couple of occasions, I think September, October, when we were able to have a service, albeit sort of limited in numbers, which was really lovely. And all of a sudden, we were locked down yet again. Mm-hmm. But being in London, it means as well that people have got the opportunity, I suppose, to go to other churches. They tended to, not so much now, because we've got video calls and we've got Zoom as well. We can tap into for Sundays. And I've missed the Swiss church. I've missed the congregation. I've missed this sort of get together. But at the same time, the COVID has allowed me to really tap into other services. So I've never watched or listened to so many services in any either one day or at a weekend. When there's Saturday or Sunday, you can actually tap into them. We are blessed in a way. I know it's a roundabout way, because I would prefer to meet my friends, people on the site. But this is an alternative.
Mm. It opens up the whole world. Just in January, when we met in Lincoln, United States, in an online service, who would have thought ever? Yeah, it really opens the world. And I agree with you. It's a good way. It's different.
Well, yes, it is different, but it's an alternative. It's either that or nothing. Well, it could be the radio. The radio always existed, and you can always listen to the radio as well. I mean, that's not a problem. With the internet, I can tap into Switzerland. I can tap anywhere, as you rightly said, USA, anywhere you want to, which is really great.
Maybe we should also mention the WhatsApp group we have, because we have a Swiss church WhatsApp group, and we share information about services in Switzerland or around the globe, and we share little videos. I think it's a really wonderful way to connect.
Indeed, yes. I love that idea as well. Again, it's the social side of it. I'm so very fortunate that I've got very nice neighbours, and they've always offered, if you can't go out, if you don't want to go out, if you really want to stay home away from this COVID, just shout out and we'll do something. And at a stage when it was not so restricted, to be quite truthful, with neighbours, we used to talk over the fence, or even on the Friday night, she would say, my next door neighbour, she would say, I've been working hard all the week indoors. I'm fed up. I've had enough. Would you share a bottle of wine with me? I said, yeah, sure, I will. So we would have a glass each on each side of the fence, and then be chatting at distance. Well, that was fine. And when it was a bit more lenient, then we had another girl along the way here, and we would meet up. Then we even met up here when it was really, the weather was getting a bit bad. We said, well, we'll meet up, never mind. We were kind of forgetting about the distancing a bit.
Yeah, I think it's important to find that balance, to stick to the rules as much as you can, but you also have to look after your mental health.
You've got to live.
Yeah. You mentioned something I actually wanted to talk to you about your living and your neighbours. I recently read somewhere that nearly 8 million people in the UK live on their own. And you have lived most of your life on your own, I believe?
Well, yes. Since 1964, really, when I left the family in London, I lived on my own, yes.
So I was wondering, what would you say to people who really struggle with living alone, because you have all that experience, you have your ways, and you have your wonderful neighbours. With that experience in mind, with that background, what would you say to people who really struggle during the lockdown?
The trouble is that if you struggle during the lockdown, it means that you have not made friends, or you may not have been so communicative before the lockdown. It is the sort of thing, it's just like moving house. If you want to move house, you've got to think about it. You've got to think about it when you're still reasonably young, because when you are older, you might find it more difficult and you've put yourself in a different position. In the COVID, as I had so many friends before and so many platforms, I mean, the Swiss church gave me a platform as well, in the sense that you had a little booklet advertising various things, not only just the Swiss church, but the community development for older people. And that was created about 3-4 years ago, which is part of Camden Westminster Dragon Hall, Seven Dials, which are close to the Swiss Church. And the Swiss Church agreed to put within their names within this booklet.
Oh, the WC2.
So I took advantage of that. I took the booklet and I took advantage of that.
Maybe we just have to explain it for listeners a bit more. So there's this magazine called WC2, that's a postcode, and different charities and organizations who provide services for elderly people, but also for different community groups, they advertised in that magazine. And the Swiss Church also advertised in that. So we had it in the church, and you read it on a regular basis, didn't you? So
it was only just the one-off. I always saw one of these booklets, which I picked up. I took it home, read it, and I thought, this is of interest to me. So I joined two of the classes, which I was particularly interested in, and that was line dance, because I wanted to sort of keep going and meet others as well. And the other one was yoga, chair yoga for the elderly, because I wasn't really too keen on the yoga as it is known. I thought, no, chair yoga, I'll try it. It's worked very, very well. And we keep in touch. And again, it's WhatsApp groups with different groups. And with the WC2 there, it is that we get, because I'm a member of that organization as well, we get an email every day. You open your box, you've got an email. How are you doing? What was your night? What was yesterday like? What did you do? And then you have a variety. Again, you can pin in it to a theater. You could be watching theater. Everything is virtual. Of course, obviously, you've got to be equipped. But if not, they can still write to you. They always ask you, what would you like? The latest is, which is again right up my street, they are going to offer a taster session for Spanish conversation. These sort of things that are really, that's out of my interest. And being on my own, I've never felt alone. I've never felt this loneliness that people talk about. I'm blessed.
Because you've always been maintaining your friendships and tapping into networks. And I must say, I really admire that about you. I think it's absolutely fantastic. And we can learn a lot from that. So before we come to the end, last but not least, what do you miss most about Switzerland? And what do you not miss at all?
I don't miss anything at all due to modern technology. I'm in touch with the family almost on a daily basis. The only thing is I don't see them. Well, I do virtually, either through WhatsApp or through other means like Zoom and things like this. I don't miss the family to that extent. I know they are not near them. It's just 1 year. Let's hope that next year will be better. And it was the same for everybody. I don't miss that. I don't miss the practical things. So what I miss is traveling, but everybody does.
But anywhere. So you miss traveling in general?
Anywhere. So I'm in the same boat as everybody else. I really am contented with life. I look forward, obviously, to the day when we can actually meet or travel and eat somewhere with somebody, not just eat on your own, you know. It's not off Switzerland. It's things that here that I miss. Well, right, eating on your own. I know I have a drink over the fence with the neighbours. That's it. I think I'm very blessed to have a very nice and supportive family, getting on well with them and have very good friends. Obviously, you have this Zoom. Without them, if we referred to the 1963-64, when everything was in writing, I didn't have a mobile phone. Nobody did, I don't think, in those days. Or if they were as large as an ordinary landline phone, which you couldn't carry with you, something of the kind. That would have been a different ballgame, definitely. But today, well, and it is probably also the experience of life. You're used to living on your own and you just get on with it. That's your choice. You get on with it. And under normal circumstances, I would have visitors, I would be visiting. It's like everybody else. So that's it. That's my life.
Wonderful. Well, it seems you're a London girl who happens to be born in Switzerland. Thank you very much for talking to me today, Fernand, and give us this insight into your life and your life with the Swiss Church and lockdown in Britain. Thank you very much.
Not at all. You're welcome. My pleasure.
Die Geschichte von diesen jungen Schweizerinnen, die in der Zwischenkriegszeit und nach dem Krieg nach England ausgewandert sind, ist ein verlorenes Stück Schweizer Geschichte. Die Journalistin und Autorin Simon Müller hat es aber aufgearbeitet. In ihrem Buch «Alljährlich im Frühling schwärmen unsere jungen Mädchen nach England». Sie hat Interviews geführt mit Frauen, die die meisten heute noch in England leben und teilweise auch zu unserer Gemeinde gehören. Für das Buch hat die Autorin auch eine der grössten Evakuierungsaktionen in der Schweizer Geschichte recherchiert. Nämlich die Rückschaffung dieser jungen Frauen in die Schweiz, wo der Zweite Weltkrieg ausbrach. Leset das Buch, ich kann es euch wirklich empfehlen. Und die Angaben dazu findet ihr in den Shownotes. In der nächsten Episode rede ich mit einem alten Bekannten, mit dem Laurin Redding. Er hat mit mir in den ersten paar Episoden von dem Podcast London erkundet und jetzt nimmt der Laurin uns mit ins Quartier Marylebone und erzählt uns ein paar Geschichten aus dem Nähkästchen von der Zeit, wo er bei der Schweizer Botschaft gearbeitet hat. Hört rein! RevLab.